Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, one of my favorite people in the whole world. Longtime University of Oregon defensive coordinator, father, grandfather, Pac-12 network analyst, pasta-eating Nick Eliotti is with us. How many days a week could you eat pasta?
How many can I or how many do I?
What's ideal? Like if we're laying out the menu.
You know, in a perfect week, I could eat it every night, first of all, but my wife's not going to let that happen. She's more looking out for all that kind of stuff that ladies do. Anyway, I won't go there. I could get in trouble. But I'd say two nights a week, Thursday, Sunday. I can manage with a good Thursday, Sunday. We had some last night, in fact.
Like that. You're a red sauce guy. I'm a red sauce guy. I'll do pesto once in a while. I'm not an Alfredo person.
Not at all. We've talked about it. In fact, interesting enough, I'm sure everybody wants to hear that. Last night, I did a little light red mixed with some pesto. Came out fabulous. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an experiment deal. It was really good. I'm going to do it again. And my grandkids and son and daughter-in-law, they loved it. So we're going to try it again.
All right, Nick Eliotti, you're making me hungry in this lunch hour. We got to get pasta together. But what do you make of the Pac-12? Kind of a rough week at large as you look across. What was the biggest surprise of the weekend for you?
Wow, the biggest surprise. There's a couple, really. You know, it really hurt, I think, the Pac-12 to lose Arizona State, losing to BYU, which I knew that had a chance of happening. Utah losing San Diego State, and then UCLA in an epic game. Well, Hayner was fabulous. I mean, one of those storybook-type endings. All three of those were tough. In my eyes, the biggest one that was the biggest loss that hurt us was UCLA, because I still think UCLA is a very good football team, and winning that game after the LSU win, coupled with Oregon, I thought those two teams – in my mind, would still and still will might be the South and North champions meeting up in the championship game.
What does Chip Kelly have going, and what did Fresno State, in your mind, do to them? Was it just a Jake Hayner, a quarterback who is playing at a level that, you know, is difficult for a defense to deal with, or something else going on there?
Well, you know, after I watched the game, I watched all the games, the ending there was hard to stomach because, you know, I find myself always rooting for the Pac-12. And you know, I root for Chip because I work with him and I like the guy. But and he said after the game that they threw everything they had defensively, whether it was blitzes, maximum coverage, zone pressures, everything they had. And they couldn't, you know, Hayner just had one of those lights-out games. But that all being said, one tackle inbounds where they had an opportunity. I don't know if you get to see that at the end there. They had one opportunity to tackle the receiver inbounds, and he made it out of bounds. Had they made that tackle, it would have really helped. You got to protect the sidelines in those situations, and it seemed like they really got hurt on the edges and in the sidelines. That's a tough, tough loss. So I'm sure they're hurting after that one because they let it get away on two occasions, because they come back twice, and then Fresno State goes 70 yards or so on two drives, one with 56 seconds and one timeout. That's always a tough one to swallow.
Nick Eliotti with us, Pac-12 network analyst, longtime college football coach, defensive coordinator at Oregon. The USC performance, they started very flat. New head coach, interim coach, and Dante Williams. What do you make of USC and sort of their season now without Clay Helton?
They've been an enigma to me for the last... You take Pete Carroll out of it, and if you look at this, I'm going to give you a long-winded answer. The last 40 years, they've had 8 football coaches. Going back to around 83, 84 with Ted Toner. Nobody's lasted more than 6 years, and every 7 of the 8 have been fired now, with the exception, as I mentioned, Pete Carroll. And he's the only one that really had SC playing like the SCs that I grew up with John McKay and John Robinson. So it's hard for me. Everybody's still living in the past with SC because of what we remember in the great athletes. But right now, what do I make SC? I don't know. I will say this, getting down 14-0 on the road, a plane incident to start the game, down 14-0, losing your starting quarterback, playing a guy for the first time on the road, and to come back and score 45 unanswered points and getting the win, that will go a long way for Dante Williams and the SC football program.
The physicality of Utah is a mystery. I'm used to Kyle Whittingham's teams being very physical. They got pushed around by BYU. They lost the line of scrimmage against San Diego State. Is that a personnel issue there, or what's happening?
It's got to be, John. I couldn't agree with you more. Their offensive line, particularly, you know, we always think about the great defense and special teams at Utah and smash mouth, running the ball. They've always struggled throwing it, and that continues to be a problem. That's haunted them, but the fact that they're losing the line of scrimmage, that is a real concern because we always think of Utah. I always think of Utah as a team that's going to win 8 to 9 games nowadays, and they're having problems not only at quarterback but at the line of scrimmage. So that's a big concern for Utah moving forward.
Jonathan Smith in Oregon State, you know, as the Pac-12 kind of melts in the background, I start to think, you know, maybe they can win more than 6. Maybe they can get 7. Maybe they can get 8. I don't know. What do you see when you look at Jonathan Smith's teams right now?
I like what I see. What I have seen since Jonathan's been there, besides we won't get into the culture thing, but he's trying to build a culture, which every coach tries to do when they come in. Offensively, they will keep you off guard. They can run it. They throw the ball well. They always mix in a couple trick plays or wrinkles, but not gimmicky, just enough they throw them in there. So offensively, they really keep you on your toes. And the fact that they can both run it and throw it, it's a two-dimensional offense. They have been since Jonathan's been there. I think they're very, very good offensively, and he's creative. Then I see a defense that is improving. They are improving. They still need to recruit, which they're working at, but they're improving. And to throw a shutout, as you mentioned earlier, I don't care who you play. Oregon played Stony Brook and did get a shutout. Now, they shut him out after the first 5 minutes or so, but to throw a shutout is hard to do because that ball could bounce just one way bad, and the other team gets position and scores. But, so, Oregon State, right now, I did this the other day. I put them in the top 6. They're in the upper echelon of the Nick Eliotti ranking for what that's worth out there at this moment.
I love that. I say the same thing. I'm interested to see them play against USC this week, just to kind of see where they're at. I think it's a great test for them. You brought up something that made me think about, you know, I think it was many years ago, you were the D coordinator at Oregon, where you were opening your season against somebody like, I think it was Arkansas State, and then maybe you had like Tennessee Tech in like the third week. And I can remember you coming into the news conference post game, and it was like a 63-14 win, but you weren't happy with it. And I kind of wondered, like, is Nick Eliotti trying to get his guys' attention? Like, hey, it's not good enough if our goals are a Rose Bowl or a BCS berth, or, you know, so give us an idea. Like, you know, you get blowout wins like against Stony Brook or Tennessee Tech or Arkansas State. You come into the post game and you say it wasn't good enough, or our guys were a little sloppy. Are you trying to send a message in that scenario as a coach?
Partly. Let me start with this. Those are no-win games. You can't win, because no matter what the score is, because everybody's expecting you to beat those kinds of teams and to beat them bad. So if you don't beat them with a large margin and look just perfect in every facet of the game, and nobody's played a perfect football game yet, it's disappointing. It's disappointing. And then too, when you think you have a football team that has a chance to go to the Rose Bowl or a BCS Bowl or just have a great team, you want excellence. You're always striving for excellence. So it's really never good enough. And that's what makes those games so difficult, because we look at, for instance, last weekend, 17-7 at halftime against Stony Brook. Everybody's probably, you know, disappointed. Wow, what's going on? What's happening? Well, Oregon scores 31 unanswered points in the second half to win 48-7, and you leave with the feeling of, well, that's a good margin, but was it really good enough? Okay? Well, you know what I'm saying, John? Was it really good enough? And then it's always good enough when you win the football game. So as a coach, though, you're striving for excellence, and you want your guys to know, no matter who you're playing, there's a standard with which we need to play with and how we need to look, what we need to look like. And so many teams, no matter how much you preach it, the young men lose sight of that. As you saw, they had the attention of their team when they played Ohio State. No matter how much you preach it, you don't have the same attention when you're playing Stony Brook. And if you could bottle that attention when you have a big opponent like Ohio State, and the kids and young men can really understand that, and you do that every week when you have a great team, you'll really be special.
I remember now, I'm looking at 2012. It was 2012. You had Tennessee Tech in the third week. You beat them 63-14, and you came into the post game, and, you know, everybody was saying, hey, great win. You blew them out. And Nick Eliotti said, you know, I wasn't really happy with the 14 points, and you kind of focused on that. The following week, you won 49-0 against the number 22 Arizona. And I wondered, like, is that an attention-getting tactic? It's always good to hear that stuff. Nick Eliotti with us. Oregon, what do you see from Oregon on the defensive side of the ball? You've watched them now a few weeks. Without Thibodeau, how long can they go without Kayvon Thibodeau, or are they doing okay, in your opinion, without him right now?
Well, I thought that the first game they didn't look very, very good after Thibodeau went out against Fresno State. Then you look at 637 yards against Ohio State, but in watching that game, I'm saying they're not getting knocked off the line of scrimmage. They're playing hard. They're playing good football. And then you look at the yards, particularly the passing yards, and you go, wow, that's a lot of offensive yards given up. Then last week early, as I mentioned, Stony Brook is battling. I mean, I was proud of Stony Brook. They're battling their tails off. They score early. They're actually almost taunting Oregon in some regards, some of the players. But they hold them to 7 points. So, and it looked to me like they played a lot of backup guys. More than they have earlier. So, and then Arizona's not going to be a test. I mean, I hate to say that. Those coaches are cringing right now that they hear Nick Eliotti or a media guy, so to speak, say that. But Arizona's not going to be a test. We're going to find out a lot when they have to go play at Stanford. That is going to be the first. Well, Ohio State obviously was a test. That'll be a test. That'll give me a gauge – as to how good this defense is, because Stafford plays a different brand, a different style, fullback, multiple 6-7 offensive linemen, power O, smash mouth, play action. That's when we're going to have a good idea of this Oregon defense.
When I look at the Pac-12, I just see some teams I just expected more from. We talked about Utah. Arizona State is another mystery. Herm Edwards today saying we've just been sloppy. The energy isn't there. You know, they almost look distracted.
John, they've had 36 penalties in 3 games. I don't know if I'd use distracted. Disjointed, not paying attention to detail. I'd use stronger words than that. I mean, my goodness, I don't understand how a team could be not ready to play on the weekend of the game you're playing. All you have to do, I used to say this, all you have to do is suck less than the team you're playing on that given Saturday. You're not. I mean, when you really think about it, that's all you have to do. You're not playing everybody else. You're just playing that one team. You just have to beat that one team. They had 16 penalties and 4 turnovers against BYU and still had a chance to win the game. They better take care of their own backyard because whatever you want to call it, that's a whole lot of penalties, a whole lot of turnovers. You are not going to win many games with that type of performance.
Yeah, it's just confusing because you hear so much, you see the talent, and then they go out, and you're right, they're just a mess on the field. You know, everybody's going to look at the Pac-12 and go, hey, it's Oregon and everybody else. You like Stanford. Who else in this conference gives Oregon? Stanford, UCLA, Oregon, USC maybe? I mean, who else in this conference could get to the title game in your mind?
Well, my top 6 right now would be, and I don't remember my order, but Oregon's number 1. Number 2, I still put UCLA. I think that Stanford's in the top 6. I'm not saying they're 3. They're in the top 6. I say Washington's in the top 6. I say Oregon State is in the top 6. And then I think I gave USC the nod still being in the top 6. So, you know, Oregon State and Washington, still watch out for those two in the north. Because I still think Washington's a good football team. I really do. I think with COVID 2020, everybody lost a year. Bad loss to Montana. Michigan, that wasn't a good look for them because defensively they're usually pretty strong. But don't discount Washington because they have some players. And so moving forward, it'll be interesting.
Jimmy Lake, first-time head coach, long-time coordinator, respected in the business. Different job, though. Can you maybe help the average listener understand, like, the transition? You were a coordinator, D coordinator. If you had transitioned to head coach, you're now the CEO of the program. Give us an idea of how different that is.
Well, when you are the defensive coordinator or the offensive coordinator, your world is just this: my offense, my defense, my special teams. When you're the head coach, you're in charge of all that. It all has to go well. It's just like when you scrimmage, if you're the head coach, are you happy if the offense looks good? Are you happy if the defense looks good? You kind of want a give and take. You know, offense looking good at times, defense looking good at times. So it's, and then you have your hats of administrative meetings, dealing with all the other things, problems that the players have, overall problems that players have. Now you got NIL. Now you got to recruit the guys that are on your team for transfer portal. Make sure your backups are still happy. There's a lot of hats that a head coach has to wear that are different than when you just have one side of the ball. So it's a whole different world. And so Jimmy's probably fighting his way. Jimmy also being a defensive coach, I think early John was thinking, hey, we're going to play great defense like we always have here at Washington, and we're going to be vanilla on offense because I'm going to win on defense and special teams. And I think he's finding out, and will find out, even if you win on defense and your offense is sputtering, the fans are not going to be happy. So you got to have some offense. So a lot of hats being worn by a first-time head coach.
Nick Aliotta, you're the best, my friend. I always appreciate you joining us, and thank you for that.
John, you're awesome. I need to know if there were any tears from you and Anna on Sunday. I need to know.
Tears, yes.
Dropping off your number one, Dakota, I need to know.
Yeah, there were some tears. It was a long hug. I turned and walked away. I had glassy eyes. A couple times on the I-5, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it kind of hit me. You've been there.
You know what? It's awesome. Have that emotion. And as I know you both will be there for young Dakota. She's going to thrive. She's got the makeup and the backing from her mom and dad, who I know are solid. Trust in that. And thanks for having me on.
Nick Aliotta, there he is. Pasta every night. Leave it here. You got the bald face truth. So many questions to be answered in hour number three of the show. I hope you stick around for it. Bruce Barnum sold a bunch of beers. 2,000 plus, if you were paying attention. Should he keep going? Pac-12 got embarrassed over the weekend. We'll talk about John Harbaugh's guts. We'll talk about the biggest surprise in college football all season. And when is enough? When to say when? Boxers have a hard time with this. Manny Pacquiao's trainer came out and said he's not done. He's not retiring. He should be retired. Like, there should be something that just says, hey, man, you can't do this anymore. In professional sports that are team sports, general managers and teams, they vote on this. They tell a player when...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.